of, we have reviewed and selected designs together, and they're having huge input on the language that is going in the signage. It is the story of the local Japanese Canadian community, and it will be their words. And this is rewarding to help them deliver that.
Davis says the projects took shape after grant funding became available, allowing the Seven Potato Society to partner with the city.
The site will be Japanese Canadian in feel, which is really is something we've been working closely with our landscape architect and our local Japanese Canadian society on hitting that right. So taiko drumming performances, the traditional cultural festivals that will be able to take place there. And then also it will be a programmable and bookable space for our community. So it will be a beautiful pagoda with seating where you can come and book it.
She speaks on the two upcoming projects.
I hope this project makes people, local people, aware of what happened to Japanese Canadian people in Nanaimo around the time of World War II. And it makes people aware of the timeline. It wasn't that long ago. And it's amazing to see the Japanese Canadian Society come back and flourish in Nanaimo. And so I think it's a very, you know, humbling story to hear and heartening as well.
Charlotte Davis describes what she hopes people will take away from the monument. The monuments are scheduled to be done by December 2026. More information about the project is available at the City of Nanaimo's website. For CHOY in Nanaimo, this is Luis Sabla.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you again to CHLY and Luis Sabla for that piece on Nanaimo honoring Japanese Canadian history with new legacy projects at their local parks. We're going to be taking another music break halfway through the hour. This one is coming from local band Chopping Spree. This is their track, Two Rooms.
Thank you.
We are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in this far. We have about 21 minutes left in the hour, and at that point, you'll be listening to Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Make sure you tune in for that. Before we get into any of that, though, we still got a lot of news content to go through, a lot to share with all of you today, so let's play the next piece. This one is also from our friends CHLY, but from another one of their local journalism initiative journalists, Jeannie Lin. Let's take a listen.
This is a CHLY and Dick FM news update. The Comox Valley Land Trust is considering the future of a property left to the public by a hermit. On July 10th, participants were invited to tour the diverse ecosystems around the 27-acre Oyster River Hermitage. Located near Catherwood Road, the Hermitage was once home to the late Father Charles Brandt, a Catholic priest, hermit, and environmentalist who lived there for 50 years. The tour was led by guides from the Youth and Ecological Restoration Program, which engages youth in ecological restoration and conservation projects in the Comox Valley. Graham Hillier coordinates the program.
I hope that it's a space where nature can remain nature and remain at peace, but have an opportunity for the public to come and enjoy that nature as well, and realize that it's part of our community as well, and we need to be gentle on it.
Prior to passing in 2020, in 2019, Father Charles Brandt placed a conservation confidant on the property with the Comox Valley Land Trust to ensure it would remain protected as a nature park in perpetuity. 4 years later, the property became an official Comox Valley Regional District Park.
Father Charles Brandt was a Catholic monk and found peace and solace in nature and wanted his greater community to experience the same thing and feel as passionate about nature as he did.
Although the property is a CVRD park, it has not yet been developed with trails or signage. As part of the project, two participants in the Youth and Ecological Restoration Program spent a week researching the property alongside biologists hired by the CVRD. The group studied the site's ecosystems and explored how a trail network could be developed while protecting the environment.
Comox Valley Regional District sponsored the research that was done here this week by the youth and the biologist, and I think the youth did a great job on their tour demonstrating to the public how this property could be used by everyone in a respectful way.
Hillier and the two youth participants led a public tour to demonstrate how trails could be laid throughout the property. Along the way, they highlighted the land's diverse ecosystems, including mature and young forest stands and a variety of native plant species. Hillier says preserving properties like this is important.
Like, it's really important in this day and age to have lands put aside that are not to be developed or cleared, especially a property like this with some mature forest on it that's right along the Oyster River, and with so many different forest types and microclimates within one 27-acre property. It's a pretty special place that he left the community.
Mark Harrison is the manager of parks at CVRD Recreation Services. He says that the park is relatively new and that there are no imminent plans to develop it, largely due to resource constraints.
We're holding it as a land holding, but we're not actively managing the park. Once we enter into a management planning process, and that management planning process really looks at the environmental factors that are there. So, you know, what's important in terms of ecology, biodiversity, wildlife, all those kind of things.
Harrison says in addition to environmental planning, other factors such as recreational potential and adjacent land uses are also taken into consideration.
So there's a whole bunch of kind of information gathering, as well as inventory gathering, where we look at, you know, what's on the site in terms of tree canopy, in terms of slope, all those kind of things. And we end up with this large baseline for the park, and then we get engagement input for the park. And from that, we end up with usually a general management plan for the park.
He says a general management plan is required before making any site planning of a public park. According to Harrison, there is no timeline on when this plan will happen for the property. Visitors can learn more about the Oyster River Hermitage by visiting the Brandt Oyster River Hermitage Society at charlesbrandt.ca. For CHLY and Dick FM, I'm Jeannie Lin.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
We are back with Speak Up once again. Coming up next, we have an interview I did with SFU Professor Jen Marchbank, who is currently creating an archive of 2S LGBTQ plus stories for those living in Surrey. Let's take a listen to that one more time. Reporting from Surrey, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. At Simon Fraser University Surrey campus, A presentation was hosted by Professor of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies, Jen Marchbank. The presentation showcased Marchbank's newest project, a collection of oral history interviews from the 2S LGBTQ plus community of Surrey for the purpose of creating a digital archive. As stated by Marchbank during her presentation, the queer history in places such as Surrey that reside on the periphery of larger cities like Vancouver are often overlooked. The project aims to combat this by sharing the lived experiences of 2S LGBTQ plus people throughout Surrey. To learn more about the project, what it entails, and when it will be released, we sat down for an interview with Jen Marchbank. Please take a listen.
Well, hi, I'm Jen Marchbank. I'm currently the department chair in the Department of Gender, Sexuality and Women's Studies. This project is Telling Our Stories, a Queer Oral History of Surrey, BC. It's part of various projects that I have conducted since about 2010 in Surrey in terms of things like doing public histories.
And what spurred you to pursue this project in particular? What was the motivation behind it?
Well, one of the motivations behind it is that I feel that here in North America, we kind of privilege certain cities as being metro cities with safe and active around 2S LGBTQ activities, etc. And I felt that Surrey has not been fully represented in that, and especially important because Surrey is actually the place where we got a Supreme Court decision on school materials being acceptable through James Chamberlain's advocacy, and also the HIV travel ban removed through the advocacy of a man called Martin Rooney. So they were both Surrey residents when they did these important national and international legal changes. And so some of the work I've been doing in the past is to ensure that their voices have been recorded, that they have been, when I did a museum exhibit a couple of years ago at the Museum of Surrey, they were the kind of anchors for that exhibit. But also I want to make sure that we don't just hear about the crises in 2S LGBTQ lives, right? Or we don't want to just hear about people like me who are activists. We get our voice out there. I wanted to record people who connect to Surrey in some way and who just want to talk and identify under the umbrella in some way. I just say to them, here is an opportunity. We have some guiding questions, but please, what story do you want to tell? So some people have told stories about being an activist. Marta Rooney told us the HIV travel ban story. We've had other people talking about running queer youth groups, and some people just about, hey, I grew up in Surrey and I happen to be non-binary.
Yeah, and how have you decided or chosen who to speak to? How does that work? Is it an outreach process, or are people coming to you saying, hey, I want to be a part of this archive?
It was publicized on social media and through various networks. But we also last year, certain people we reached out to most definitely, right? And we said, we need you to come and speak about this, please, this, please, this, please. So one of them was we wanted to have someone who worked in media. So we reached out to Mike Keeping and said, talk about OutTV and the work you do there and all the other work you've done over the years. But we got people who volunteered themselves, or someone would come in and be interviewed and said, you need to speak to so-and-so, I'll get them to contact you. And we put out there our telling our stories one@gmail.com email address so people could do that. We had a booth at the Surrey Pride Festival last summer. And again, that was another way of reaching people. I was really keen to reach people. Yes, there are certain people's voices that stories have to be told, but I also wanted to say, those are not the only voices. And so people who I know who've been involved in previous projects, I asked them to talk about something different if they were in my project.
Another thing that I think is interesting is you talk a lot about, you know, the way in which cities that sort of neighbor these big metropolitan areas, such as the city of Vancouver, are often overlooked when it comes to queer representation and queer history, but, you know, no matter what city you're going to go to or look into, there are going to be queer people there. So there is always going to be something to talk about, some level of history that is worth documenting. But I guess I'm curious because it does feel like the city of Surrey in particular has had this reputation of being less progressive and less open and less accommodating for queer folks. And I'm wondering if part of this project is trying to dispel some of that or even just share the stories of people that are in Surrey and maybe are struggling with their identity.
Okay, so part of this project was when I came to Surrey and I looked around, and that was 20 years ago. And the very first thing I collected, I decided that I needed to do some public history work, and I started collecting T-shirts and mugs and things like that from various Surrey Pride festivals. I started an excellent relationship with City of Surrey Archives. And back in 2018, this is a story I told yesterday, that I was at an event. I was on an SFU history panel. I mentioned that I had an archive in my office, and that started my relationship with the City of Surrey Archivists. And that's an ongoing, really positive relationship. Heritage Surrey have been fantastic. I also developed some excellent relationships with the museum curators. And over the years, I have been part of 3 exhibit curations, and my archive stimulated a couple of other people to say, oh, what about me? I can give you this. So share. Alex, Amar Sanger and Martin Rooney donated their materials, which meant that when the City of Surrey does its open house days, you know, where you can go in and look at displays at City Hall, at Stewart Farm, or in the museum or the archives, those materials are available. So one, yes, is to make visible to that person who might be saying, I don't know anybody else, I don't feel validated, I really do feel representation matters. So there's that. But also I want to make sure that there's an accurate recording of who's doing what where. And I also think that if people know that this is going on in Surrey, they won't feel the need to always move to another metropolis. I mean, we are a huge city with a great history of activism. It's a slightly different activism. And people are always surprised. You know, when I say to them, June 20th is the 27th Surrey Pride Festival, they go like, what? People still say things like, I didn't know Surrey had a Pride, because we're shadowed by Vancouver. But these days, so, you know, since moving into the Lower Mainland, Delta has a Pride picnic. Langley has a Pride Day. Langley's got a Silver Pride, which is for queer seniors. So there's been those, and there's, you know, the Fraser Valley Pride Society, you know, all the way from Delta to Chilliwack. There are groups of people organising to provide social events, support, information sharing, all those kind of things. You know, they're not just geography based. You know, we have Pinoy Pride for the Filipino community, Share Pride for South Asians and their allies. They're very active. So there's a lot going on. And if we only look around and say, well, Vancouver has a big parade, then we're missing a large part of the picture.
So it sounds like this project is sort of contributing to the effort of representing Surrey's queer community as a whole in a way that maybe it hasn't been.
It's not representing and saying that this is a microcosm of it. It's about, you know, here are the people who are willing to be put on video. So there's a whole lot, that's a whole barrier to a number of people. So I'm not saying that I've got a representative sample in the way that social scientists work with that, but it is putting more voices out there. And at this stage, it is simply gathering the stories. So gathering the stories via Surrey Pride Society, which will then donate them to that city archives. But also we're transcribing into French and English and Punjabi. So this is going to be a resource for anybody who wants to say, I'm just Googling around to find something. Oh, that seems interesting. I think we'll get a few visits from people from England because there's a confusion between Surrey, BC and Surrey, England. Quite often get Surrey Pride events. We go, no, we're Surrey, BC. But I think we'll be able to get, you know, people will be able to look from around the world and see what these stories are and maybe use them for their own research projects or their high school homework.
Yeah, it's a great resource that you're building.
Well, I haven't analysed it at all yet because I want it to be complete, and then maybe I will do, I will certainly be, I'm going to be writing about the methodology of it, the process, by oral history and by oral histories and queers in different places. But at the moment, you know, what will go out is unedited. We told all of our participants that what you say will go out completely unedited unless you ask us to make a particular edit.
Right.
You know, someone names somebody and goes, oops, maybe I shouldn't have done that. We'll blank out that name.
And yeah, you mentioned that there, it's going to be translated in three different languages, English, French, and Punjabi, which obviously that makes a lot of sense considering the demographics of Surrey. Is that something that is also that you want to represent in the people that are spoken to as well?
Yes, absolutely. And what we've done is, I have done, 10 years ago, I did another project, which was raising awareness about elder abuse in the 2S LGBTQ community. And I did that with Claire Robson and Gloria Gutman, both of SFU. We found that the translations we got when we put our posters into Punjabi were a little bit stilted because there was no queer language. So it was, there was no, the words were like women who love women rather than any term that meant lesbian. So it was a little bit not what we wanted. So this time round, we've identified a queer Punjabi translator. So who will use the language that is currently being used in Punjabi to describe identities and relationships that fall under this rainbow banner. So we wanted it to actually speak to that, speak to queer South Asians as well.
For sure.
And we have had people being interviewed there as well.
So one of the last questions I had for you was just, when can people begin to access these archives, if there is a timeline for this project?
There is a timeline. We want the final interviews will hopefully be before July. The transcribing is currently going on, and that transcribing will include English subtitles on all of them so that, that there's access for people who have hearing disabilities. So we will have English subtitles along the bottom. Then we're aiming for a September launch. So that will be a public event in Surrey in September, where people will be invited to come and view. You know, we'll have some TV screens up and we'll be showing little clips of different things. And just we'll invite everybody who has participated and those who have supported the project. And we will have an event to launch it. And then after that, the city archivists will have to do their legal stuff. Maybe we can get the legal stuff done before that so that when we cover up in September, it's already on their YouTube channel. But I will also have access to it. So if people know about it, say, can I get access before? I can't quite do that because of legal matters. But once we've got it all done, it will be available somewhere in the fall of 2026. I should also say at this point that the reason I can do this project is funding from the federal government. I was very fortunate via Surrey Pride to get a Women and Gender Equality grant from the federal government, which has really helped me in doing this work.
Once again, that was our conversation with Jen Marchbank, a professor of gender, sexuality, and women's studies at SFU, who's currently working on a project that will include a collection of oral history interviews from the 2S LGBTQ plus community in Surrey. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Reporting from Surrey. Whoops. All right. We have reached the very end of this hour of Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. Make sure you tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. for Intravenous with Nicole Hines. Nicole will be airing a interview that SFU volunteer journalist Serena Zaidi did with Morag Burke, the director of TRIA, TRIA, a marketing and branding company that was involved with this year's FIFA tournament.
Hi, I'm Amy.